Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this Empowerment Hour. We're broadcasting all over the world, and I'd like to thank the people who have caused a 16% increase just this month in our listenership. We are the fastest growing internet radio station in the world, and this is the number one listened to radio program anywhere in America for open minds, independent minds, and most importantly, progressive minds, people seeking solutions, not just to reform, but to transform our issues. Today, two issues dividing the program in half. The first will be Gerald Salante. We're going to talk about what's happening. If you look at the Wall Street reports, they'll tell you we're at 11,160. Happy days are here again. We're out of the recession. Green shoots everywhere. Look at the jobs we've created. Just have faith. Vote back in the Democrats, and they'll take you to the next level. Really? Well, we're going to share some information that'll be a wake-up call. And Gerald is one of the people who have, through his Trends Journal and the scholars that he has brought together to create this Trends Journal, we're going to take a look at what's wrong and we're not being told. Not by the mainstream media, not by the talking heads on television, not by the leaders of the think tanks on the left or the right, not by the left nor the right, not by Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow, nor by anyone on the right. So we're going to tell you the story, and it's not pretty. Then, time permitting, an in-depth, original, exclusive investigative report, The Truth Behind the Vaccine Thimerosal Aluminum Autism Spectrum Disorder Cover-Up. There was a meeting at a place called Simpsonwood, a Christian retreat. At that meeting was the World Health Organization, heads of the FDA and CDC's vaccine oversight, and all the top vaccine manufacturers. They met to conspire on how to cover up the connections between any form of neurological disorder, and let's say the energy within the brain, the mitochondria, any disorder, and connections with any single or combination of vaccines. For the first time anywhere, we will cite you their words from their mouths and what they're saying that should have been shocking to everyone, that the entire vaccine connection was proven. There is a connection between vaccines and autism and other conditions, and the mainstream media chose not to talk about it. Members of Congress did not explore it. There's been no under oath investigations about it. And as a result, American children by the millions are put at risk, and their parents are speaking out. We will share the exclusive, never before discussed, verbatim comments of these people. They should all be brought up on crimes against humanity, and we will talk about it. Let's go first to Gerald Salante. Gerald Salante is one of the pioneers in trend strategy. He founded the Trends Research Institute and its Trends Journal in 1980. And he is now covering over 300 different fields, from business and finance and politics and the environment and food and society and technology and on. He is the publisher of the Trends Journal, comes out four times a year at trendsresearch.com. Nice to have you with us again today, Gerald.
Oh, Gary, it's always great being on with you.
Gerald, let me quote just from the front page of the journal I just received an hour ago, and then we'll go to you. This is from the current Trends Journal. By the summer of 2010, the bottom was falling out of the U.S. economy. The evidence was voluminous and cumulative. It showed up in the numbers, both on paper and on the street. The numbers did not lie, but the White House and mainstream media experts did lie. An honest look at the typical week in August 2010 told the story. In the sweltering Georgia heat, an unruly mob of 30,000 crowded at Atlanta parking lot, desperate to win one of just 455 prize vouchers for Section 8 housing assistance. Some had waited for a long time, for days. People were trampled, fights broke out, and cops in riot gear were called in to keep control. This Georgia scene was not an aberration. Rather, it was a symptomatic of the state of the nation. In the same week this cash-starved people were fighting for an affordable roof over their heads, it was reported that some 20 million U.S. homes, either unsold or foreclosed, stood vacant. It was an August in which headlines read, U.S. trade deficit unexpectedly widens to 50 million, mortgage arrears deepens U.S. fears, factories lose orders, builders lose confidence, housing starts in U.S. increased less than economists forecast, and others. The headlines told the real story, but that's not the way it was being told by political prostitutes, Wall Street shills, and media barkers. From the onset of the crash that began in the summer 2007, they had been suckering the public into placing bets to keep a rigid and doomed game going. The collusion went on at such a high level that it passed for rational policy. From late 2008 through 2010, by federal government and Federal Reserve dictate, the economy was seeded with unprecedented trillions of dollars of TARP stimulus and sundry other bailout dollars. No single initiative in the history of the nation would prove more destructive. These actions would ultimately lead to a financial dust bowl, were glowingly described in a column by the Federal Reserve Chairman about the so-called green shoots that would sprout from sea to shining sea. Over the course of 2 years of lavish fertilizing, too big to fails, and securing critical voting blocks of civil servants, teachers, and unions with employment guarantees and shovel-ready projects, Americans were being reassured that surely, if belatedly, green shoots were indeed flowing. Folks, the act is working. More people are going to be put to work this summer, boomed Joe Biden in June of 2010, as he officially announced the Obama administration. Now, that's just page one of over 20 pages of this journal. Now, to you, Gerald. Last night on 60 Minutes, did you see it?
No, I didn't.
There was a first report, well done, that showed something that we've been filming for over a year. Educated all college graduate individuals who had come from the working class, the middle class, professionals, engineers, architects, lawyers, and they were all unemployed. They filled an entire gigantic room. When he asked about how many had PhDs and MBAs, all these hands went up. College graduates, every hand went up. Then when he spoke with these people, you saw these were people who didn't engage in strikes, didn't engage in anything other than working on their lives. All of them had something in common. They were all broke. Many were homeless. One woman who had made $100,000 a year was now looking through dumpsters for plastic and glass bottles to sell, for which after 3 days of filling up the back of her car, she got $36. A woman who had made a lot of money each year now was homeless and living in the attic of a friend's friend, where it was shown she was vacuuming the carpet and washing dishes so she didn't feel as if she was imposing she wanted to do something. But now one guy making $300,000 a year had lost all of his savings, had used up everything, had been for 2 years unemployed, and now had a job at $8 an hour from $300,000 a year in a Target's. That was the face that 60 Minutes showed. That is the face that we've been talking about. That is the face of the unseen American. There are 100 million of them. Let's pick it up from there. Now, you should tell us the following from your perspective. First, talk about why we're seeing an increase in the value of stocks on Wall Street at the same time we're seeing a loss of income, a loss of homes, more foreclosures, repossessions, jobs being offshored, people going broke, and none of that is being seen, but all these false talking heads about how good everything is. Your thoughts?
Well, on the college issue, as we've been saying over and over, if you're sending your kid to college for an MBA in business administration, art history, religious studies, or whatever, you're wasting your money unless you could afford it, and it's a luxury. It's wonderful to go to school and get that kind of an education. Unless you're going for a real something that's going to provide a job in the future that's going to have a return on investment, don't waste your money. Get involved with someone where you could learn as an apprentice and work your way up. The whole college industry is one big racket. And I know that's going to upset a lot of people. And when I rail on about what a failure the education system is, it's not as though, you know, I'm making these things up. When you look at where America ranks compared to other developed nations, you know, we don't even win place or show in the amount of high school kids we graduate that go to college. And if there was any semblance of an education system in this country that was working at any significant level, we certainly wouldn't be in the position we're in now, because we would have all those smart people out there solving the problems. So as we look at one industry after another, one sector after another, all college and universities and schools have done is they've put out a lot of people out there that know how to regurgitate exactly what they were thought and don't have the capacity to think for themselves. And on that same note about the college industrial complex, you know, they're paying these coaches, what, $1.5 million, $2 million a year to field a football team or a basketball team? What does that have to do with going to college and learning? Absolutely nothing. And just as you squander all that money by building these enormous cafeterias, you know, that look like the back room of the Four Seasons Hotel, and these student unions with these lavish swimming pools and sports facilities around the university, well, you only could spend the money so many ways and put it in so many different directions. And the direction the universities have put it into, that's entertainment. So people that go to college and expect to get something out of it without taking a degree in something that they're going to be able to use it in, such as health and in fields such as that, new alternative energies, cybersecurity, places where there's going to be growth opportunities, they're just wasting their money. Now, why is the stock market continue to rise? Number one, it's very thinly traded and easily manipulated. As you were reading from the Trends Journal, that we say the Wall Street shills and media bankers, they had suckered the public to placing bets to keep a rigged and doomed game going. It's a rigged game. And when you start looking behind the numbers of the companies that are doing well on the Dow, 40%, Gary, or more of their business is coming from overseas. These are not U.S. companies. There are very few of them left. These are multinationals. So we're looking at a market. And the other thing is they're borrowing money for almost nothing. So these huge companies are paying down debt, taking on huge amounts of cash, and borrowing at very low rates. So temporarily, things look very good. The market, the stock market, is not, with a capital N, an indicator of what's going on in this country. It's a rigged game run by the Wall Street Mafia. It's nothing more than a casino. Period, paragraph. So when you look at the show that you were talking about, and in the real world, and all of the foreclosures going on, and the fraud being committed by the banks, that's really telling the real story, and particularly unemployment. No one could get away with this kind of garbage except politicians. When they passed the stimulus measures back in 2009, they said that in 2010, the highest that the unemployment rate would go would be 8%. the effective unemployment rate right now, the people that are unemployed looking for jobs, can't find any or have part-time jobs and are underemployed, is at 17.5. The official Cook number is 9.5. It's not working. They've run out of stimulus, and the criminals out there are devaluing the dollar in front of us so that the exporters could sell more of their junk overseas, particularly military implements, to keep the country going as they're devaluing the dollar. And that's why, folks, the prices are going up at the gas pump. The prices are going up in the supermarket because the prices are based on dollars. And the more that they devalue the dollar, the more it costs you to buy everything. So they say, but no, the inflation numbers aren't going up. That's why there were no increases in Social Security and benefits. You're right, the numbers aren't going up. What you can buy with the value of the dollar is going down. So that's what's going on, Gary.
All right, I appreciate that overview. Now, the areas I would like to address include the different economies, not an economy, but rather the economies where we have 24 million Americans who have at least $1 million in asset, 2,000 individuals who are the mega rich, who have between 500 million to billions of dollars, 1,000 of those are actually billionaires, but we have another 2,000 who are super rich. We have 8 million people who have over $5 million. So all told, if you take just the very richest Americans, you're dealing with about 31 million Americans. That's one economy. Then you take the middle class, which includes your professional class, engineers and sociologists, psychologists, people who have their own businesses, and most people who have their own business are, at the end of the year, they're in the middle class. People like myself, who last year took no salary, because had I taken a salary, I would have been in a deficit position. And so I gave what I would have earned to my own employees at the end of the year as bonuses. But I'm one of those people, I employ over 60 people, and at the end of the year, I have to make good choices, because if I make a wrong choice, then it means someone who does have gainful employment and does have enough money to feed their family and pay their mortgages won't have that. And yet at no time during this year was I helped by the county, state, or federal government on any level. In fact, to the contrary, I was punished. And yet 70% of all jobs in America come from people like me and you. And yet we are given no stimulus. We're not helped at all. Had we been given interest-free loans for 3 years and had to employ a $30 an hour person for each $1 million of that loan, and then had to pay it back at 2% interest, we would have stimulated the economy, but we were given no advantage. We also have to look at all the senior citizens who are living off Social Security, who are virtually invisible, that you never hear about them. You never see anyone going into the home, let's say, of a 70-year-old woman who is widowed and who lives on a Social Security, but whose costs for medicines, food, mortgage, or rent, or taxes and insurance are greater than what she has. So now she's going to a supermarket and buying cat food, tuna, so she can eat it because she can't afford the regular. And yet she falls under one of those unusual government programs that doesn't help her. I want you to talk about these various economies that we have, because these economies are getting no attention, no help. And then that's one. Then I want you to go from that to the absurdity of the Democrats and Republicans voting for stimulus programs that, when you look, $350 billion, or over approximately one half of the entire stimulus went to the states, not to create new jobs, not to build infrastructure, but mainly to protect the union employees so that they had a guaranteed vote. So in effect, they were giving a stimulus to the states to protect the vote of the unions to keep themselves in power. I want you to talk about that. Then I want you to talk about what you see happening in Europe in France, in Germany, in England, and they're taking cuts in the military-industrial complex. For example, a $2 billion submarine, nuclear submarine, by England got stuck in on the shore on a sandbar in Scotland. They were talking about the fact that how in the world did the most technologically advanced submarine in the world get stuck on a sandbar and had to have tugboats take it out? And I would ask a different question. Why in the world does Great Britain need a $2 billion nuclear submarine? The wars of the future will not be fought from submarines, nor from battleships, nor from tanks going across deserts. And so why continue to feed the military-industrial complex? So England has agreed to cut back military spending by 20%. I want you to look at why we refuse to cut back any military spending at $1 trillion, where we could save $800 billion if we cut back. We refuse to do it. Both Democrats and Republicans, both from Obama to Clinton and Bush, have all increased this spending. Why we are afraid, and why the media, especially, but not limited to the right-wing media, think that it is a sacrilege to suggest that we should cut our military-industrial complex, and also they consider it unpatriotic, and they consider it the worst of all sins to suggest we're not fighting the right war on terror, and that we shouldn't be approaching Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, and Iran the way we are. I want you to focus on that. So this is a lot to focus on, but before you do that, Kara Lee, our program director, just came into the studio, and she says she has a letter that is germane to what you're going to answer. So, Kara Lee, could you recite whatever the email is from whoever you're reading it from?
Of course, of course. I just got this email, actually, earlier today, and I thought it was really interesting, and so I'll try to be brief, but this woman who stays anonymous sent you an email saying that she was very concerned and very angry. She has been listening to you for the past 30 years, grew up listening to your show, and always followed your health rituals. She is 41 now and lives on the Upper West Side with her husband, and they're millionaires, and they said that, you know, they live in the higher wealth bracket, and they go shopping at your store, and you know, are very familiar with all the work that you do. However, one of her friends recently recommended her the book to read called Living in the Moment. And so as she was reading this, she started to kind of realize that she had been lying to herself. You know, her husband got rich off of working on Wall Street, and she's an attorney. And this past weekend, she went up to the Hamptons to celebrate a friend's birthday. So she's going to the Hamptons, and she's talking with her friends, and she starts getting angry because she's not rich enough. Some people in the party there, you know, were multimillionaires, very, very well off in the top bracket of, you know, the American economy, and she wasn't talking to them because she wasn't wealthy enough. And you know, as she was talking to her friends, she realized that they're not happy because they consider themselves rich enough. You know, they need yachts, and they spend $2 million redecorating their apartment, and they still don't want to invite people over. And she realized that, you know, she had been basing her life off of all of these materialisms and illusions and lying to herself. And she kind of realized what a hypocrite she had been. And she said that your book made her realize that.
So she's angry because of the truth the book revealed.
Exactly.
Well, let me address that quickly. And then, Gerald, I'd like for you to address this philosophically. And I'd like to welcome all of our WPFW audience in Washington, Baltimore. We have a lot of people listening right now who are working governmental agencies. We have a lot of people from all walks of life listening. This letter is not unusual. I actually had someone come up to me the other day on the street. I was filming a homeless person, and they were listening. And afterwards, this guy in blue jeans and a baseball cap and sunglasses, and he said, "Gary, I shop in your health store all the time. I was interested in this, what you were saying with this vet." And I was asking what he does, and he said he's a successful financier. And so I asked him a simple question. I said, "Would you have stopped to speak with this homeless person?" He said, "No." I said, "Have you gone out to be a big brother to any orphaned boy?" He said, "No." I said, "Have you helped any other race or ethnic group beyond your own?" "No." Have you looked at what it is to be unemployed or poor in America?" He said, "No." I said, "Are you wealthy?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Do you have enough wealth?" He said, "You never have enough wealth." I said, may I ask what group are you in? Are you in from a million to 5 million, 5 to 50? He said, above 50 million. I said, below 100 million? He said, yes. I said, do you feel comfortable being around billionaires? He says, you can't get around billionaires. That's why. He said, well, you got to understand. And we had this very interesting conversation. And I appreciated his honesty. I said, I appreciate you being honest with me. He said that he and his family tried to vacation in a place, I don't know this place, up in Montana, where the billionaires are. It's like a big lodge, and Bill Gates is there, and Warren Buffett, and all these very rich people. And he said he couldn't get in. And it's been his goal for he and his wife to be able to get into that environment so they can tell their friends that they have a place there. And I said, but I've been in Montana. You know, there's a lot of nice places in Montana and Wyoming. He says, that's not the point. The point is that you want to be where the richest are. And he's been trying to get invited to this enclave that happens every August at this guy's place out in Utah where the Barry Dillers and all these people get together, because if you have $100 billion or $200 billion, you don't get invited. You have to be a policymaker. You have to be an elite politician or an elite business person or an elite business person academic, then you're invited. But if you're not invited, then your whole life is trying to get into a place you're not in. And he said, so we have a boat. And when I got the boat, it cost a lot of money. And we've never gone out in the damn boat. And it was about $14 million. And it's enormous upkeep and insurance. And I hate boating. And I said, why'd you get the boat? He said, a simple reason. When you can talk about that you've got a yacht, and then it's not that you have a yacht. Who decorated your yacht? How much did you spend on the yacht? How long is the yacht? Then it's all about taking out the measuring stick. And so if you want to be a somebody within your crowd and show that you're relevant, you have to bring to the table something that shows you're able to do something. So then I asked him, I said, so hold on a second. So you don't like boating, but you would you buy a yacht so that you can be seen. He says, Gary, he stopped me, put his hand on my shoulder. He said, Gary, the world I live in is a complete myth. It's all BS. Every rich person I know is just full of crap. He said, but we're all full of crap, meaning this whole group. He said, I've never met a rich person that's happy, because you're always looking at who else has got something you don't have. And we had this interesting conversation, and I asked, would you be willing to be filmed? He said, no. He says, no way. He says, no way. He says, I'm not going to tell you any of this stuff, because he said, I'm not willing to sacrifice what I have. I said, but you're already admitting that no matter what you have and you get over $50 million, you're not happy. He says, no. He says, but that's the choice I've made. Now, you just read a letter from a woman who said they spent $2 million on decorating their apartment, but they're not going to invite anyone because someone else probably spent more. And it's not that someone else spent more, but who was the famous designer? And then you'll have a person who goes in and gets paid more money to design an apartment, so it's not how good they did it. It's that they did it. It'd be like having a famous chef serve you. The chef could serve you and your guests dog food out of a can and decorate it on a plate, and it wouldn't be, oh, we're getting served dog food on a plate. It would be, do you realize that we hired such and such chef who came here? And suddenly it's the chef, it's the image, the illusion that somehow you've done it right. I could take you to every famous restaurant and show you the crap food and all the celebrities who are idiots sucking up as if somehow they've got a table and you don't. They're eating food from a famous chef who's not. Now, I'm a gourmet master chef. And I used to cook all the meals every Wednesday in my restaurant to about 400 to 500 people. If I had a famous chef in there cooking bad food, I'd had more people. Cooking good food that's healthy and tasty and beautiful, my audience appreciated, the average person wouldn't. So it's all about illusion. It's all about image. And that's also true for the people that go into supposedly counsel our government. Is Larry Summers the smartest economist? No. Gerald Geithner? No. Are they inviting anyone who is really good? Gerald Salante? No. Chris Hedges? No. Paul Roberts? No. Are they going to, Dean Baker? No. The good people, men and women, who have solutions, don't live in illusions. They're real and authentic. Everything that you see in the media, Every institution, every general on television, every talking head is living through myth and illusion. All lies, all deceptions. So it's interesting that this couple who listens to this show and shops in my health food store with half of the celebrities of the Upper West Side, almost every day you go in there, you see all these famous people, they're living in illusion. Why drink wheatgrass and why do something if the rest of your life isn't in balance also? That's the illusion. Gerald, your thoughts, please.
Well, on the rich, it's ironic that you're talking about this because this is also a major topic in the Trends Journal. And I just want to let you know that we ended on a very high note. You've been to my building in Uptown Kingston, New York, and right across the entire front, 45 feet long, 2 feet tall, we put a sign up, "The American Renaissance has begun." The death of a nation is happening in front of us. And from this death and a plague that we see coming, there's going to be a rebirth, a renaissance, a rejuvenation. And we're really promoting that aspect as well. We call it the 20% solution. 20% of the people are thinking and looking in different directions than the vast majority. Having said that, and the point about the rich, I would, when you talk about the top, the billionaires, they're totally out of touch. There is no question about it. But the other point too, Gary, is that when Obama comes out with talking about increasing the tax rates for the rich, you know, he calls the rich, he calls people rich that are making $200,000 to $500,000 a year. Now, a lot of business people, you know, they, not a lot. There are business people that make the individual entrepreneurs that make that kind of money. It's not big money today. It's living well, but it's not rich. If you were to lose everything you had and only had $500,000 for the rest of your life, and you had some kind of serious sickness and needed somebody to take care of you, that money be washed up in no time. But having said that, those are the people also that provide a lot back to the community, that support the arts, that are active. But now let's talk about that other group. And here's a little bit from the Trends Journal. In America particularly, the disparity between the rich and everyone else, the widest of the developed world, was matched by a disparity in understanding. So insulated and so far removed were the very rich, and to a lesser degree their minions and lackeys, from the struggles of the hardships of the common man, that buying gold was incomprehensible, a behavior peculiar to irrational lower orders, the jerk class, as Charlie Munger called them. That's Warren Buffett's chief henchman. We go on to say, yet that inability to understand was understandable. Under no circumstances would any of the white shoe boys set be reduced to hardship. At worst, they might experience less superabundance. Pity the basic billionaire who lost 90% of his assets and was left with a puny $100 million to squeak through in tough times. How could they understand? They were the impervious, as they were the unconscionable. In their theo-economic universe, money was sacred, and a bonus was no less than a spiritual reward. In the immortal words of Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, they were doing, quote, God's work, and it therefore followed that everything they got, they not only earned but deserved. To even suggest that the billionaire class was not paying its fair share amounted to fighting words. Quote, it's a war, declared Steven Schwarzman, net worth $6.4 billion, ranked 53 on the Forbes 400 list. Quote, it's like when Hitler invaded Poland in 1939. We go on to write, had anyone but a Forbes 400 member compared the start of World War II with its misery, bombs, bloodshed, and death of tens of millions to the prospects of a billionaire paying a few million more in taxes, the media would have ripped them apart with the ferocity reserved for Holocaust deniers. But the white shoe boys and the white shoe of Wall Street were simply of another world, far removed from the world of those everyday others trying to survive on Wall Street. So that's how we look at the issue of those mega millionaires, and they're running the country. Let's get this straight. The rest of the people are paying for their losses. When you talk about what's going on in Europe, look what's going on in France. The American media says, look at them. They're complaining because they're raising their retirement age to 62. While in the U.S. over here, they want to push it up to 67. Let's get the numbers straight. That's partial retirement. And number two, the French dump a lot of money out of their paycheck into their retirement. And the French know the deal. These are the people that invented the guillotine. They know what the deal is. What do you think, Schwarzman and Blankfein are making all of this money, and Buffett and Munger are making all of this money because they're so brilliant? No. It's because they're members of the Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Bullets, Banks, and Bombs Club. They're doing deals. The French know the story. So as long as they have the elite on there up there making policy, they know what it is. Now we want our share of the take. It's as simple as that. And you're seeing that's why they're taking to the streets in France. That's why they're taking to the streets in Spain. That's why they're taking to the streets. You're going to see, well, already in Latvia, Lithuania, Slovenia. Every day, Gary, we get emails from people all over the world. When are Americans going to wake up? The atrocities being committed by their government are even worse than the ones going on over there in the countries that they write from. You hit it on the head. $1 trillion plus going into this war effort. How come this money isn't staying at home? Anybody that picked up the papers over the weekend and saw the atrocities that the American taxpayer is paying for in Iraq and Afghanistan by these mercenaries and our soldiers slaughtering tens of thousands of innocent people for what? So the whole system has become so insane that even to make sense of it and to even have a discussion, for example, about people wondering about, oh, am I going to be accepted in the billionaires club? Oh, my God, I might lose money and lose ranking. This is what this country's gone to. The merger of state and corporate powers is called fascism. And just open up today's New York Times, read the op-ed, the editorial piece on how Obama is supporting the atrocities and tortures of the Bush administration. So nothing is going to change in this nation until the morality is brought back. So when you look at what's going on in the world, it's going to be a taste of what is actually going to happen over here. Because, as you mentioned, these people living off Social Security, now they didn't even get any increases because they're cooking the inflation numbers to make it seem like there was no inflation. And the absurdity for people, adults, to think that a politician is going to, in this election, make any difference in the coming years. When are they going to grow up? For an adult to think that a politician is going to look out for them is as insane as a John thinking that a prostitute isn't going to take money from them. Wall Street is honest, and politicians will stick by their word. So what we're looking at here is that the people that believe that the Tea Party or the Republicans getting into it, it's just more of the same. Nothing is going to change. And one of the great themes, by the way, in this Trends Journal is break the chains. People have to break the chains. don't buy anything from a chain. Don't go to a chain store to get eyeglasses, to get your muffler fixed, to get your beloved one's bodies buried. Stay out of the chains. The only way that we're going to have real freedom is to break the chains. Don't eat corporate food. Don't buy corporate food. Don't patronize anything that has a chain attached to it. We have a great photo in the Trends Journal of a side of a McDonald's building with all of this junk that they're selling for $1.99, and next to it an American flag. You know what? Let's call anybody that uses an American flag to sell their junk, to sell their hatred, let's call them anti-American. And the only way America's going to go back to what it used to be is by going local. Breaking up the federal chains, the chain stores, and the grip that the rest of them have on us.
Okay, Gerald, there are some areas I want to cover. By the way, I will cover tomorrow the truth behind the vaccines. I don't want to break up Gerald, who's on a roll here, and I still want to cover the WikiLeaks and how American media refuses to take an honest look at what the story of WikiLeaks is. Instead, they've either completely downplayed it or they have criticized WikiLeaks for revealing sensitive information as if that sensitive information should be kept secret instead of learning the lesson of how our government, our military, our presidents, our commanders have betrayed us and what kind of harm they've done. I want to deal with that. I want to deal with the Federal Reserve printing money and monetizing the debt. They don't have anyone buying this debt, so they're buying up their own treasury. And what we would do if this was anyone else in the world who monetized their debt at trillions of dollars. And where do you think the dollar's going? And where do you think the future's going for the American cities, the American communities, and the working class, the middle class, and the poor class? I need you to talk about that. I also want to take a look at what we can learn from the French, the English, the Irish, who are going through rough times, protesting, but about what they're doing to have a quality of life where the average American, if you saw this last night, they all, Gerald, it was phenomenal. They all looked like a deer caught in a headlight and about to get creamed. No preparation. They had no food. They had nothing stored. The last time you were on, I talked about the fact that I tried to keep about 10,000 pounds of grains and legumes in dried storage. This year I gave enough to feed about 3,000 people as to charities because to help them, but the average person has nothing to help them if there's a hard time. They're literally caught without any food to eat, and they don't think it's going to happen. They put no money away. They didn't buy gold. They kept into their houses too long. They kept believing that everything would be all right, and they literally were watching the tsunami by turning their the sand chairs around when the wave hit them. I mean an entire group. So this is not a couple individuals. It's an entire culture that refuses to be proactive and prepared. So I need your comments on what we need to do and what you see happening if we don't, on honest evaluation. All that in a moment, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Gary Noll. Gerald Celente, C-E-L-E-N-T-E, the publisher of the Trends Journal at trendsresearch.com. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We're in the last segment of our program. We have 12 minutes to go. We will continue on with Gerald Celente. Gerald, I've given you several areas, including how the Europeans and people around the world are looking at the WikiLeaks, The Shaming of America by Robert Fisk, looking at why, quote, as usual, the Arabs knew. They knew about the mass torture, the promiscuous shooting of civilians, the outrageous use of air power against family homes, the vicious American and British mercenaries, the cemeteries of the innocent dead. All of Iraq knew, but they were the victims. Only we could pretend we did not know. Only we in the West could counter every claim, every allegation against the Americans or British with some worthy general, a ghastly U.S. military spokesman, Mark Kimmett, and the awful chairman of the Joint Chief of Staffs, Peter Pace, come to mind, to ring-fence us with lies. Find a man who had been tortured and you'd be told it was terrorist propaganda. Discover a house full of children killed by an American airstrike, and that too would be terrorist propaganda or collateral damage, or a simple phrase, we have nothing on that. Of course, we all knew they always did have something, and yesterday's ocean of military memos proves it again. Al Jazeera has gone to extraordinary lengths to track down the actual Iraqi families whose men and women are recorded as being wasted at U.S. checkpoints. I've identified one because I reported on it in 2004, the bullet-smashed car, the two dead journalists, even the name of the local U.S. captain, and it was the Independent on Sunday that first alerted the world to the hordes of undisciplined gunmen being flown to Baghdad and protect diplomats and generals. These mercenaries who murdered their way around the cities of Iraq abused me when I told them I was writing about that back in 2003. That's one. Then Iraq war vets reveal war crimes. That's a second one, and that's by Global Research, Layla El Arian. Nicholas Davies from Global Research, deaths revealed by WikiLeaks are the, quote, tip of the iceberg, and that it's far more than that. And Robert Fisk, they're trying to sell the Brooklyn Bridge again, and talking about how every time you go to television, there'll be a, quote, or read the New York Times, there'll be a defense official predicts slow Afghan progress, senior U.S. military officials, military officers, a senior U.S. military official, all lying, all giving us propaganda. Your thoughts on what this tells us about our excursions into Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and ultimately into Iran.
Our entire Spring Trends Journal was about the Great War coming up and how all this is leading to it. There's a wonderful quote from Dante, not a wonderful one, but a very telling one. The hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in time of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. Every American that knows the atrocity and sees it, whether or not they want to deny it or paper over it, they know what it is, that maintains their neutrality and silence is taking the death of every Iraqi, Afghanistan, and any other person that America kills as being part and parcel to that murder by supporting it with their tax dollars and not fighting against it. That's where their money is going. I'm not a kid. I've been around. I'm in my mid-60s. Who made up this stuff about mercenaries going over to protect our soldiers? Can you imagine? This is supposed to be the U.S. Army, all these tough guys, these Marines, and what do they need, private security guys to protect them? Who made this story up? What are these, soldiers of the Fortune 500? Look what's going on in Iraq. Oh, they're talking about now they're going to need about 16,000 mercenaries to protect those people from the State Department that are going to be there. Oh, and they call them advisors, those 50,000 troops that are left behind. They're not combat troops. You know, what am I, stupid? You know, I didn't remember the Vietnam War when they called them advisors. How could any intelligent people, number one, buy this baloney, and number two, how can they accept it? Because it's a blemish on everyone's soul. And they're going to take it with them wherever they go, having supported this and maintaining their silence. So it's very clear to see what's going on over there and where it's all going to end up. War is a racket. Major General Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine in history until his death, said that. And, of course, Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. And I want to make this really clear, too. I'm sick and tired of hearing this baloney line thrown out. I have to support my police, my firemen, the teachers, and the military. No, I don't, and I won't. The military are a bunch of losers. Look at this guy they had, that weasel McChrystal Meth that snuck his way out of Afghanistan, that general, when he knew that after asking for 30,000 more troops and the great push in Kandahar, as goes Kandahar, goes Afghanistan, before he saw they lost in Marjah, that he was going to lose in Kandahar, he floats this phony story in Rolling Stone to find his way out, so he gets fired. This is the United States military that stopped the Germans in the Battle of the Bulge, wiped out the Japanese in World War II in the South Pacific, and they can't beat a bunch of guys with no shoes and light arms, and it's always, we're making progress, we need more time, more men, more money. So they're bankrupting the country. This is a perfect example of empire decline. So that's how we see that going, Gary.
Okay, now, in the time we have remaining, take a look at America. Its cities, its suburbs, its urban areas, its country areas. I'm seeing it. Since we talked last, I've been to towns where their streetlights are not working. At night, they turn them off. Police helicopters have been sold. Fire departments cut in half. Streets that are not paved with potholes, grass growing everywhere. I'm seeing this slow but irreversible decline in the quality of our urban landscape, suburban landscape, and yet it's almost imperceptible unless you're there. Tell us what you see happening over the next 12 months.
One paragraph from page 20 of the Trends Journal. Trillions of U.S. tax dollars are being squandered on ruinous wars and a ravenous defense industry. America's infrastructure was rotting and antiquated. Road repairs that used to be finished in months now took years. Rail and metro systems were a century behind the times. Many of its inner cities and older cities had become decaying wastelands. If it keeps going like this, Gary, the scenario keeps going in that direction. The only way that we can see this country coming back, number one, stop the wars, stop them now, close the bases. Oh, and by the way, there are people I respect in the media whose shows I go on, and one in the mainstream media, and one of them is Judge Andrew Napolitano on Fox's Freedom Watch. I've been on several times with him, and boy, this guy comes straight out and talks against torture. He comes straight out and talks about against the wars going on and the fact of the stimulus is going to the big guys. So there are people out there. And I think if enough voices come together, and for the morality, values change, morals don't. You don't kill innocent people for fake reasons. And I'm no pacifist. You know, if somebody tries to take my life, I'll take theirs. And so I believe in that level. But as we're looking at what's going on, what's going to happen to the cities, look at the numbers. Kids aren't graduating college. The kids that are, they can't get a job. So how can we revitalize this? Let's rejuvenate America. All these sad kids on 60 Minutes yesterday, get them out of the house. Get them on their own. Bring them into the inner cities. Bring them into dilapidated areas like in Carbondale or Binghamton or anywhere around. And let's start having a new homesteading act. Let's take these houses, beautiful, built with real construction, not the garbage they build now, and refurbish these. Bring old neighborhoods back, just like they're doing up here in Kingston, New York. The American Renaissance is a rediscovery of the greatness this country had. I'm not looking at rose-colored glasses. I know the bleak points and dark points of this country, but there was greatness about it. And one of that points of greatness was beauty and quality. If we focus on those two things, as they asked Cosimo de' Medici when he had all this extra money in the beginning of the Renaissance, what should we do with it? He said, invest it in beauty. So if we start taking that kind of attack, bringing America, and look, you're one of the foremost people in the world talking about health, particularly about the health of America. Look what the average American looks like. Look how they dress. Look what they eat. We're not going to go back until to become a progressive nation until we get in shape physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And as we're looking at it, Gary, The grasshopper Indian summer is going on now. Winter is only weeks away, and we're going to go in to the harshest economic winter in history as we head into the Greatest Depression. We're going to start seeing the results of the failures even more prominent. Current events form future trends. You asked me about the dollar. Here's a headline. Dollar weakens on G20 vow. Fed stocks commodities advance. The dollar is being devalued. Today, gold went up $17 an ounce following the G20 meeting. The worst is yet to come.
Final thought in the 2 minutes we have left. Take a look at why we should not be supporting either the Democrats or the Republicans, but should be looking to create a third party, and why the Democrats would be wise if they stop attacking people who hold a view that the government has failed them. And even if these people are not organized or if they're not always politically correct, at least they are legitimate in their concerns. And these people have been marginalized and ridiculed and made into racists, and yet the majority are not. Your thoughts?
Well, the reason why people shouldn't put any faith in the Republicans or Democrats is the same reason not to put any faith in the Gambinos or the Bananos. They're two criminal organizations. By their deeds, you shall know them. Look at the wars of the hatred and how they've been stealing our money to give it to their friends. Well, the Democrats can't be wise. As a French friend of mine saying is, dogs don't make cats. The Obama apologists always keep saying, oh, if the Democrats would do this or the Democrats would do that. The only way we could go and have advancement in this country is to break the monopoly of the two-headed one-party system. We call it progressive libertarian, progressive in terms of all the things that you talk about, whether it's the environment, food, and safety in those areas, and libertarian in terms of closing the bases overseas, bringing the troops back home, putting America first and the government staying out of our business. Look at you, I don't want to fly anymore. I don't want to go through one of these radar X-ray machines. You know, I've been reading that how unhealthy they are, and I know from my friends that refuse to go through them that they're humiliated and they're strip searched.
Gerald, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much. I look forward to our next conversation.
Hey, thank you, Gary.
Gerald Celante, I'm Gary Nall. As he said, we're going into the deepest, darkest winter since the Great Depression, and then we begin our Great Depression just ahead after the election. Have a good day, everyone.
The Gary Nall Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.